And we are in morning session. Good morning, Sue.
Morning.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Can you please call the roll?
Leonard. Fritz.
Here.
Fish. Saltzman.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Unless there are objections, I'm going to take a prerogative as chair of the city council meetings and recognize City Commissioner Dan Saltzman for a very special presentation.
Thank you, Mayor. Yesterday, December 1st, the flag of the city of Portland was lowered to half staff to honor 4-year-old Ashawn Lorenzo Medina Barr, who was killed November 4th, 2009. He and his mother were victims of domestic violence-related homicide. November marks a month of 5 tragic domestic violence-related homicide cases in the Portland area. On November 5th, was Tamika Medina and son Ashawn Medina Barr in Southeast Portland. November 10th, Teresa Beiser in Tualatin. November 11th, Varsha Sutar and son Ronak Sutar in Bethany. November 27th, Cindy England and son Kevin Coleman in Forest Grove. And November 29th, Sheena Mendoza of Hillsboro. If you are a victim of abuse or know someone who is, don't wait to get help. Call the Portland Women's Crisis Line at 1-888-235-5333. If you are witnessing abuse, call 911. Right now, I'd like to introduce Ms. Brenda Medina, Ashawn's grandmother, who would like to say a few words to us. So, Ms. Medina, if you could please come forward, and thank you for being here. You can bring your friend up, too, if you want.
Do you want to come up?
You want to come up?
Do I sit down?
Yes, you can sit down, and just give us your name in the microphone, and then...
Good morning. My name is Brenda Medina. My daughter, 28, my grandson, 4, were taken from me because of domestic violence. Ashawn was getting ready to start pre-K school. He loved to learn new things, and whatever came his way, he would do. Whenever he had hurt himself, he'd tap me on the leg and say, "I'm okay," with a smile. Tamika always had a smile and was very kind, ready to help anyone and everyone at any given time. When I would talk to her, she was always baking or doing something with her children. She was getting ready to go back to school to get her master's degree and was an environmentalist. And I know how to recycle anything and everything. DV, domestic violence, can get anyone, rich, poor, educated or not. I was in domestic violence and I rose above it, as she was trying to do. We need to be educated of this ugly monster called domestic violence. It's not okay, and you shouldn't be ashamed. Leave before it's too late, and don't become another Tamika Ashawn. She was my best friend, and I'm sure yours. God must have gotten short of angels and needed 2 more. They will be missed. Please don't forget them and the others that have died and passed away from domestic violence. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda, very much. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, for your work in this area and for setting up this system of honoring and acknowledging this awful and serious crime in our local area. So thank you. There are a couple of announcements before we move on, and if I could do them at the beginning so I don't forget to do them later. First, the city council meeting the evening of the 16th is canceled. Just so there isn't any confusion, I will be hosting a public forum, same place, same time, on the same issue of the North Reach of the River Plan, but it will not be, and I will be taking public testimony, but it will not be a city council meeting. Due to an error, a voluntary annexation request did not get filed for the city consent agenda for today. However, the notice has gone out, so to rectify this, the city attorney advises the following, that I read the following announcement. Annexation case A-1-09 concerning property on the west edge of Northwest Miller Road between Northwest Cornell Road and Northwest Barnes Road, including a portion of the Northwest Miller Road right-of-way, has been rescheduled for the December 9th council meeting. Anyone who wishes to discuss the item may request that it be taken off the consent agenda at that time for discussion on December 9th. And then I'd like to make a motion to have the City Council hear the bike plan on January 20th, 2010 at 6 p.m. Second. It's been moved, seconded. Please call the roll.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish. Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. And then finally, the zoning code change regarding PG Park, unless there's objection, has been continued to 9:30 a.m. on January 6th. So, done. All right, thank you for your patience. Sue, can you please read the title for Council Communications item number 1632?
Request of Sandy Ammerman to address Council regarding the Lou at Jamerson Park.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad that you're here.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Good morning, Commissioners and Mayor Adams. I'm Sandy Ammerman, a resident at Tanner Place. I reside at 1030 Northwest Johnson Street. We're here today to talk about the process that has resulted in a proposal to site a loo for Jamerson Park. Thank you, Commissioners, for your responses about our concerns. First of all, we commend you, Commissioner Leonard, on your loo program. And we thank the Pearl District Neighborhood Association for all their work over the years. However, we're here today to present our concerns about the way the decision was made to put a loop, an all-night bathroom into Jamerson Park in the middle of a residential neighborhood and how the process has failed us. We come with petitions and signatures from both residences and businesses who do not want an all-night bathroom in the park, and we're asking that the process be reopened. We want an opportunity to be involved in our neighborhood. The decision to put a loo into Jamerson Park was not an inclusive process. After the opening of Jamerson Park, it became apparent that the use of this small one-block park was far more intense than what was envisioned. The water feature became a wading pool for children and families during the summer months. Thus began talks of the need for bathroom facilities. About 2 years ago, there was talk between a few neighborhood association members, a couple of parents, and Commissioner Leonard, but these discussions did not include the residents and businesses. This mid-August, we found out that a loo was being designated for Jamerson Park. Neighbors began investigating how could this be a permanent structure without any notification. We first called Parks and Rec, and they referred us to Commissioner Leonard's office. We spoke with his office, and it was confirmed that a bathroom called a loo operating 24/7 was planned for the park. They referred us to our neighborhood association, saying they're your representatives, and that's where you should go to voice your concerns. So we tried. We attended our association's meetings in August and September, voicing our concerns and asking to have a decision about a loo put on hold pending open discussions with the neighbors. At the monthly board meeting on September 10th, we asked to be involved in the process, but were told that the decision had already been made by the Planning, Design, and Transportation Subcommittee on September 1st to support the loo. Per the bylaws, this decision needed to be affirmed by the General Board on September 10th. That did not take place. The bylaw states that a decision of any committee with executive status must be reviewed by the Pearl District Neighborhood Association at the next regular meeting, and that would have been on September 10th. This sparked outrage within our neighborhood. We have repeatedly asked the Neighborhood Association for copies of relevant meeting notes and a copy of their letter to Commissioner Leonard supporting their decision for the Lou. To date, we have not received those documents. I'm almost done, Commissioner. I mean, Mayor Leonard, sure. Mayor Adams, sorry. The bylaws state that the purpose of our neighborhood association is to broaden the channels of communication between the residents, businesses within our neighborhood in matters affecting neighborhood livability. This issue clearly affects our neighborhood visibility, and it should have been communicated to us by our neighborhood association. We were not given the opportunity to participate. There are more than 220 signatures from businesses and residents who have signed petitions asking to be heard. Did you know that some of those businesses and residents would be within 40 feet of the proposed Lou? Let me ask any of you this. Would you want your bedroom window or outside deck within 40 feet of an all-night bathroom with its appurtenant noise, smells, potential for crime, and door slamming all night long? I don't think you would, and neither do some of the people who are here today who have a 5-year-old son whose bedroom would be within 40 feet of the Lou.
So I have to try to treat everyone fairly in these chambers, and I've let you go over a minute and 15 seconds. I see you have written statement there.
I'm almost done, Mayor.
You've got 2 pages, and that'll be another 3 minutes, I fear. I need you.
Maybe one.
How about I give you another 30 seconds?
All right. You have before you a crime report. Despite what it says, there's been an increase in crime surrounding the existing Lou on Gleason Street. Portland is a small and intimate city. This park is a one-block park. One size does not fit all regarding the Lou. The Lou program and the way it's designed and run is not appropriate for Jameson Park. This is our neighborhood. This is a big deal. An all-night bathroom in our neighborhood. In summary, we're asking City Council to help us reopen the discussions regarding the Lou for Jameson Park. We're asking for a new process. We trust you'll do the right thing for us today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And if you wouldn't mind turning in so we
not
can...
Not at all.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
And I failed to reinforce that it's 3 minutes, council communications, and I got to try to keep everyone on as close to 3 minutes as possible. I let Sandy go over a little bit. Sue, can you please read the title for council communications, item number 1633?
Request of Sheila McMahon to address council regarding the Lou to be placed at Jameson Park.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. So that clock in front of you will help count down the 3-minute time.
Okay.
I just need your first and last name for the record.
Okay. My name is Sheila McMahon. I reside at Tanner Place across from Jameson Square. And I would like to say good morning. Thank you for allowing me to speak about some of the concerns the neighbors have in the area. There are 4 key concerns and issues that I would like to present a little bit about today. Safety, something called the bird's eye view, the 20-minute neighborhood concept, and sharing public spaces. Safety is the big concern about the proposed Lou site at the corner of Northwest 11th and Johnson in the zip car parking space. Vehicle drivers entering this intersection from Northwest 11th and Northwest Johnson would have their views blocked by this 8-by-10-foot obstruction. Also, the sighting in the zip car parking space would be a major safety hazard for pedestrians crossing the street at Northwest Johnson, leaving Jameson Park. That includes children, which would be very excited after having spent hours in the park, the elderly, blind, handicapped, and wheelchair-bound. This zip car parking space could also increase the chance of encounters by individuals blocking access to the building entry, assault, or even worse, especially for single females arriving home alone after dark from theater, dinner, via public transportation. Jameson Square is a residential neighborhood surrounded by high-rise apartment buildings. Many of these apartment buildings have balconies directly above or in close proximity to the proposed Lou site. Children, as we said, reside in these apartments. The Lou's upper louvers provide inside, out, and outside in views from these high-rise positions. The Lou interior is lit at night when individuals enter the Lou. Visitors using the Lou could be made to feel uncomfortable if they're looking out and seeing apartment building windows, balconies, and even residents through these upper louvers. Individuals standing on adjacent vehicles can view directly inside the Lou. Portland Plan includes a 20-minute neighborhood concept where essential services should be located within a 20-minute walk or bicycle ride. I believe I have provided the map of what I am speaking about. There are several restrooms available in the immediate area. REI, Safeway, and Powell's, of course, would be by streetcar 7 blocks away. The Gleason Street Loo is open 24/7. The Fields Park, which is only 4 blocks away, has incorporated into their plan a permanent restroom. Alternative ideas could be the Pacific Northwest College of Arts, which is 2 blocks. You could utilize one of their parking places with the Loo. It is in a non-residential area, and foot traffic is year-round due to the students attending college and visitors. As you can see on the map, there's a couple other ideas, the main post office. One that's not there is vacant retail space in the Jamison community. Perhaps that could be considered and converted into a public restroom with daylight hours of operation, especially during the summertime. Sharing public spaces is a report that was done September 10th. Participants in that voiced need for more restrooms, such as the Loo, in different parts of the city, including under the bridges. Sharing public spaces, new ordinance, city ordinance, should avoid displacing problem behaviors from one location to another. One major finding is from businesses and tourist interests that they're concerned about people hanging out deters patrons and visitors from business and tourist activities. In summary, there are 4 areas I touch base with: safety, bird's eye view, the 20-minute neighborhood, and sharing public spaces. It is our request that Portland City Council hold a public forum for Pearl residents and business owners to express all of their concerns, for Council to thoroughly investigate the pedestrian crossing, vehicle obstruction, and increased chance encounter safety concerns expressed today. Also, City Council investigate the Portland Loo's appropriateness in Jamison Square, a residential neighborhood in an urban setting. And finally, that the Council apply the 20-minute neighborhood concept when citing a public restroom within a reasonable, convenient walking distance from Jamison Square. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If I could, for just a second, Sandy and Sheila, I appreciate you both coming and the neighbors coming today. I thought it might be helpful. I've tried to respond to each email as I get them, but I don't know how.
Yes, well, I did receive one, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
How well they're disseminated to others. So I want to just more globally address your specific issue. I actually want to address your specific issue and then give a global point of view that I and I think many others have in the city with regard to public restrooms. You're correct that a couple summers ago I spent a morning with neighbors in your neighborhood, walking through the neighborhood, talking about facilities for children, including schools and the need for a public school and a public and a daycare. And it included a tour of Jamison Square, wherein it was pointed out by moms and others who weren't moms but were part of the tour that people using the park in the summer obviously are in need at times to relieve themselves, including young children, and that the businesses adjacent weren't allowing the restrooms to be used. I told them that I was developing at that point a concept for public restrooms and that I'd be happy to work with them in installing it, but made it clear that any installation had to be coordinated closely with the neighborhood organization. The council will not get involved in siting a Loo. We will not hold a hearing on a Loo. It is up to you and your neighborhood to decide whether you want one, which I've made clear in each email. And if you don't, that's fine. We have way more places in the city that need them than we do with Loos. So this isn't a matter of me or the council or anyone deciding where they should be involved. It was really at the request of the neighborhood that they get one. So if in your own process you decide to reconsider that decision as a neighborhood, that's fine with us. It doesn't matter. It is important that if you do decide that it be installed, that you all have some consensus as to precisely where they are installed. I'm not sure why you're not listening to my remarks, but
I think
I'm actually looking at the woman behind
me. Okay.
If you listen to my explanation, I think you'll better understand that what I'm saying is what your request is a rational request, and if there was some short-circuiting of your process, the appropriate place to go back is to your neighborhood organization and say it's been made clear to us that no, and if you'll let me finish, you'll hear my answer. I've told your neighborhood organization we will not install a Loo until the consensus is established whether the neighborhood organization has agreed to it or not. So it has been removed from the list until your own process gets worked out. Now, having said that, I believe public restrooms are a public right. I think people have a public right. I've been disappointed, to be quite frank, in some of the emails that associate public restrooms with homelessness and crime. There are a lot of us who reach my point in life who look forward to having restrooms available at very short distances because we like to drink coffee and we find ourselves at times in need of a place to relieve ourselves. In the United States, it seems we've taken an approach to public restrooms that is more based in our Puritan roots than our European cousins who have them throughout various cities. So I'm a staunch supporter of public restrooms, and I'm a staunch supporter of people having the right to have access to them. Having said that, I want the neighborhoods that have them to agree on where they go, and if there's any disagreement, I will withdraw, as I have in this case, the installation of a restroom until those issues are resolved.
That is appreciated, and I think one of our big concerns is having it open 24/7, as I expressed. All right,
it's not negotiable. People
yes.
use the restroom, and I said that in every
yes.
neat email.
Yes,
we will not modify the restrooms. People use the restroom. I will remind you, and one of my main motivators has been the James Chassie incident started around him publicly urinating, and was the allegation by the police. And I think people have the need and the right to use the restroom 24 hours a day. Now, having said that, it should be placed in a location that is as least obtrusive and most complementary to each area that it's in as possible. And, in fact, the one at 5th and Gleason was done exactly that way. We contacted all the businesses and had that discussion with them first. We will do the same with your neighborhood.
So, Commissioner, if I could just summarize what I think I heard you say, and that is that you're relying on the neighborhood process for determining
Correct.
The appropriateness of Jamison Square.
And I've communicated back to the neighborhood that I'm not satisfied that the affirmation we've got from the association is the final word until this has been resolved. We have put the Jamison's Lou on the list, but at the bottom until you guys all work it out.
So I'm, it's Wednesday and maybe I'm not fully awake yet, but I think you've got what you've came here. Asking for.
I think that is well appreciated, and we will go back to the association, and hopefully this time around we will have the opportunity to make our voices heard.
But I want it to be clear that it should be a discussion about where the most appropriate place is and not whether or not there should be one.
Right. Yes. But I, as you said, in the Pearl area there are lots of opportunities to place a loo that would be.
But the moms made it clear it should be someplace close to the park,
yes.
and just a positive discussion trying to figure out the
where
perfect
that,
place would be the best.
Exactly. Where that. I appreciate that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Mayor
Commissioner,
Adams,
Commissioner Fish.
I appreciate the people from Tanner, the people from Tanner Place being here. I've actually heard from some people in Tanner Place that have come to me saying that they would like to see a toilet in the area, and they felt that they had received some very misleading information from the building association. So I think that this forum and this chance to have this dialogue is extremely helpful. But I want to just amplify something, because I don't want there to be any misconception that the toilet issue is somehow an isolated issue that has one champion on this council, and that we're going to sort of blunder along in this process. The toilet issue is part of a comprehensive strategy framed by the City Council in consultation with the Police Bureau, the Portland Business Alliance, and Downtown Neighborhood Associations. It is a cornerstone of the SAFE process. The city has made a commitment to substantially increase public restrooms, and they've done so because there's an enormous unmet demand. Now, we are currently working on putting some toilets in Ankeny. And that's because, as you know, there's a Saturday market and there's lots of people who need public restrooms. We have been charged with looking citywide at expanding our toilet capacity. And I will say, as the parent of a 5-year-old who loves to come to the park in front of your magnificent building, it is, and I'll go further, as the father of a 16-year-old daughter who uses the park system and we don't have toilets, it is endlessly frustrating to me that my children cannot relieve themselves. I suspect that what most children do in our beautiful park is they relieve themselves, but they do it while they're swimming and not when they're using a restroom. to Randy's point, since Randy and I are both middle-aged men who occasionally have to go to the bathroom, it is frustrating that there isn't a public restroom. So I want to frame this. I think this dialogue's been helpful. I very much appreciate you coming and sharing your views, and there are things we need to consider as we figure out and fine-tune a process, because that's what we're talking about. We don't, I think, disagree on the need to have public restrooms. You're helping to shape a process. But I do want to say to you that how we go about this discussion will ultimately, in part, define our city in the next year. And I'm not imputing this to you. Please be here. I don't in any way impute you or criticize you for your advocacy. But I will tell you that when the question of toilets comes up, the arguments you've raised are raised everywhere we look to put a toilet, the same issues. And I'm not, again, maligning your right to raise them for this site and maybe a better site, or maybe this isn't the right site. But the same arguments are raised. Recently, the city was required to find a place for a winter warming center where people who are sick and on the streets could go during a winter emergency so they would literally not die in the street. And we found a location not far from where you live, other side of Burnside. And it will not surprise you that all of the residential condo owners and all the businesses signed petitions saying this is an inappropriate location and it will enhance crime and blight and will detract from our neighborhood. Well, we are also required to deal with the hunger problem, and we have some churches that have asked to set up meals under the bridges downtown after hours, and there are places that come early, set up, clean up, and have been running these programs for 13 years. It will not come as a surprise to you that when they had to be relocated because their current location is being targeted for another use, we heard from a variety of businesses and residential property owners that to sanction this kind of behavior will lead to increased crime and blight, and we should not allow it. So I want to put it in the broader context that just so you know that we are trying to find places for restrooms for people, and those people include homeless people, they include people who are housed, they include older adults and children. We want to find places for restrooms. We'd like to be able to find places where people can get a meal, and we are looking aggressively to meet that need. We also need to find, ma'am, please don't sigh. This may be frustrating to you, but it is part of our core obligation as a city. And we have 1,600 people who sleep on the street that I'm responsible for.
Please do not misunderstand that.
No, no, ma'am, I'm not. I don't want to get an engagement, but the eye rolling and the sighing does not serve your cause. Does not serve your cause. Does ma'am, not serve your cause.
Ma'am, you're out of order. You're welcome to sign up for communications if you want in future council meetings, but city council, you don't interrupt the person talking. You're welcome to sign up for future communications. This is not, you're out of order, ma'am. Ma'am, you're out of order. This is not, these are the protocols. These are the protocols of this chamber, and you're out of order.
I think this has been a respectful discussion until now, and I think we should keep it at a higher plane. My point to you, because each of you can be part of the solution, can help us get to the place. I want you just to understand, from my point of view, there's a larger context. And that context is how we, as a growing city, meet the needs of lots of people. And I suspect that no matter what rules we set up and what procedures we follow, we will have people that would prefer not to have a toilet, a shelter, or a feeding program in their backyard. I get that. But as a city, we are also obligated to meet those needs. So this has been a healthy conversation, and I really appreciate the emails I've gotten from you. But I also want us to find a way to get to yes in dealing with these other issues, not just getting to no. So I thank you.
Thank you. And just to be clear to everybody, my job is to maintain a level playing field for everyone to participate. You are welcome to spend 3 minutes saying whatever you want to the city council. But you sign up to do that. It does not happen in terms of comments from the audience without the protocols being adhered to. Thank you. Sue, would you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1634?
Request of Terry Lynn Vick to address Council regarding BOEC and the loss of job, and she has rescheduled.
Okay, great. Can you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1635?
Request of Charles E. Long to address Council regarding remembering the victims of police brutality.
Mr. Long, welcome back.
Thank you.
I think you know the protocols.
My name is Charles Long. The day following the police union's bizarre march on City Hall, the Albina Ministerial Alliance held a protest of their own, a demand for police accountability on the steps of the Justice Center. Their plea and their frustration reflected the overwhelming sentiment of the citizens of Portland regarding the pious and arrogant self-righteous posture of a police force that claims infallibility and never ever admits error. The Alliance mentioned two of many egregious assaults on citizens that I wanted to mention this morning. First, the killing of Kendra James, a slight young Afro-American woman at the Skidmore overpass of I-5 freeway on the morning of May 9, 2003. And secondly, the killing of James Perez, a young Latino Afro-American, the following March. Both were senseless, brutal, and unwarranted police killings. In both cases, the officer was not indicted, and as I recall, neither was removed from the police force. They were not accountable. Steve Dween, the Oregonian columnist, last Sunday mentioned other egregious police actions, including the death of James Jesse. I attended rallies of protest of the Ministerial Alliance and was present when the Alliance stormed the City Council to demand justice, which they never received. I attended the memorial service of both victims of police brutality. I recall that Commissioner Leonard attended Mr. Perez's service at Maranatha Church near my residence. I have asked the council clerk to give the council copies of Perez's memorial service bulletin that you may appreciate the amplified loss of a young man whose future was snuffed out, that you may sense the pathos, the sorrow, the grief, and the significance of each act of police brutality. The meaning to me of the police unions' assault on City Hall is not only their denial of fallibility or their lack of accountability, but their lack of submission to civil government. I do not believe the Portland Police Union should control this city. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Sue, would you please read the title for Council Communications, item number 1636?
Request of Alan Borland to address council regarding new no-cost source of revenue for cities and schools.
Mr. Borland, please come forward. Welcome to the City Council chambers. You just need to give us your first and last name, and you'll have 3 minutes.
All right. My name is Alan Borland, and what I would like to do is inform the city about a new viral method of earning revenue that the city could take a part of. It's a brand new website service called Blastoff, and it's set up somewhat like Facebook. And like Facebook, it's free to join, and you can invite others to join with you. And what Blastoff provides is it provides a free homepage for anyone who joins, and that homepage includes several different features. The key feature of which can help people save money and make money, is it has an online mall. Blastoff is partnered up with over 400 online retailers, and so they have the best prices on the internet for people to save money. My wife, for instance, just rented a car from Enterprise, which was going to cost her $250. And through our Blastoff site, it only cost us $170. So that saved us $80 right there. But not only that, whenever anyone makes a purchase through their Blastoff site, Blastoff gets a commission for that, which they pass back to the people who the members. And that not only goes to the member, but the person who had invited them as well. And that's how the city can earn revenue for that, is because if the city decided to join, make a Blastoff site, they wouldn't do it as an endorsement, but as a benefit that they could then provide to the employees of the city, and then also the different departments of the city. And those departments could then pass it on to their employees. Their employees could pass it on to their friends and family. They can earn extra revenue for their families, and all of that would produce extra commissions that the city and the different departments of the city could then use. That could help provide, I mean, if the city set up a blast-off site, they could then send it to, say, the police department. The police department could then send it to all the police force, and then that could enter extra revenue for the police department itself. If they send it to the school board can send it to all the faculty, which could also then extend it to the students. The students being a different case because they're minors, they need their parents' permission to join. They also can't get the commission. But the commission doesn't disappear for them. It goes into a college fund set up for them that they get distributed to them when they turn 18. So in that case, it could help provide revenue for the city. It could help families of the city in this financial times. And it could help provide education for students as well. And
what's the URL?
The URL is www.blastoff.com. The number 4success.us.
And is this something that you've created?
I didn't create it, no. I have my own blast-off site. It's currently in a closed beta process, and it's already been growing faster than Facebook. So in that regard, it's going to go everywhere as soon as it goes public. As soon as it goes public, by the way, some companies are already planning on taking advantage of that. Pizza Hut is going to put it on all their boxes. So anybody who would join it will either join it through the city when you guys invite them, or Pizza Hut will get it instead.
Thank you, Mr. Borland. Right, appreciate your testimony. All right. That gets us to the consent agenda. And somebody has pulled 1667 and requested it be heard along with 1674. Are there any other items to be pulled?
1655.
1655. Make sure I get any other items that need to be pulled from the consent agenda item? Not hearing any. Sue, would you please call the roll on the consent agenda item?
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda item is approved. We have a time certain at 9:30. Sue, can you please read first reading of a non-emergency ordinance, item number 1637.
Amend Portland Zoning Code and South Waterfront Design Guidelines to improve process to implement the South Waterfront Greenway Development Plan and to update and correct several zoning provisions applicable to the South Waterfront subdistrict.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you? Do we have an amendment for this?
I don't believe so at this time.
Okay.
So I suspect we'll be discussing one later in the hearing. So I'm Troy Doss with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me is Laura Lillard with our Urban Design Team.
Morning.
We're here to present to you what is kind of the conclusion of a project that really began in 2002 with the original adoption of the South Waterfront Plan and the 2004 Council adoption of the Greenway Development Plan for South Waterfront. So what we're here today to talk to you about specifically is we have a series of code amendments and design guideline amendments that deal with the Greenway Development Plan itself. And as we were going through a legislative process, we were asked by our planning and design commissions to also address a few other issues, kind of cleanup issues, if you will, that are in the zoning code. So to start off, our project partners in this has been many in different aspects of this proposal. And we've worked extensively with Portland Parks and Recreation, Portland Development Commission, the Office of Transportation, Bureau of Environmental Services, and Bureau of Development Services. And I should note that with us today is Mike Zilas from Walker Macy, who was our consultant on this project, who was also the main consultant on the Greenway Development Plan adopted in 2004. Tim Heron with BDS is here, as is Geraldine Moyle with PDC. They're all our partners in terms of this project. And this is also a conclusion of some of the North District work that Council reviewed just 2 weeks ago. We also had a lot of public outreach here with our original Greenway.
If you pull it right in front of you, it'll put my hand.
Yeah, it's a little too much. Okay, thank you. With our original Greenway Partnership Group, which was not meeting as frequently recently, but was meeting early in the beginning of this process, and we've been meeting continually with the Urban Renewal Advisory Committee. We've met with Sweeney Parks Board, South Portland Neighborhood Association, and Homestead Neighborhood Association, South Waterfront Community Organization, and Portland Parks Board, as well as others who've asked us to come and present to them along the way. So the Greenway Amendments. Really, the primary focus of this was to follow a council directive from 2004. And that directive was to find a way to operationalize, if you will, the Greenway Development Plan that was adopted. There's a reference in the code today, as in the design guidelines, to this plan. But the plan wasn't adopted when the code was originally adopted in 2002. So there was a little bit of a stumbling block there. We were asked to go ahead and find a way to allow this to be reviewed more efficiently by the Bureau of Development Services and to serve the applicants better when they chose to use this option in the Greenway Code. The concept itself deals with various components. There's a strong habitat component that's focused a little bit to the north, or a lot to the north and to the south. There's more of an urbanized aspect of the Greenway in the central district. And then there's a trails component that weaves through the entire Greenway north to south, providing both commuter and recreational opportunities for bike and pedestrians. So what we chose to do in this case was, rather than put in development standards, which is common in the rest of the development code for the Greenway, we decided the best approach would really be a Type 3 design review. The idea that it would allow for continual involvement by all the stakeholders who helped craft this plan originally, and I should note there was something on the order of about 150 different entities that took part in the crafting of this plan back in 2004. The Type 3 design review process allows them to stay involved as each additional review comes before the Design Commission. It's a pretty democratic process. It allows them to go through each of the hearings, which is usually about a 2-3 hearing process. And should there be an appeal, that appeal is brought back to the City Council rather than sending it down to LUBA, where it would be really handled outside of the jurisdiction of the city in many ways. To give you a little bit more feedback about how the design guidelines work in this regard, I'm going to have Laura take over here for a second.
This slide that you're looking at is taken directly from the guideline document, page 9. It's basically a roadmap for how the design guidelines work. What you're looking at is on the upper left of the page, design guideline heading, which just states the broad objective of the design guideline. And then there's a kind of a lengthy background statement, which basically describes what the design problem is or the issues that necessitate the need for the design guideline. There are images throughout which support the background statement. And then the design guideline itself, the language serves as the approval criteria for the applicant. Following that, we typically do a few examples and graphic and written descriptions of what the design guidelines may do. And these basically answer the question, what is an example of how to accomplish this design guideline? And we usually provide anywhere from about 2 to 6 examples of how to accomplish the design guideline itself. This is not meant to be an exhaustive list. There are many creative solutions that are illustrated, that are not illustrated here. And this is part of the reason, this is part of what the design review process is intended to do, allow flexibility in the design which meets the intent of the guideline. So these are just descriptions of, you know, how one might accomplish the design guideline itself.
So the process by which this design guideline document was updated, and I should say the entire design guideline was updated as well. So the graphic imagery was carried over from the original one, and some new graphics were actually included. The overall formatting of the document was updated to match a more modern style that we're currently using. So it's it was worked through with the Design Commission through a series of public briefings and work sessions, including in hearings with the Design Commission and Planning Commission this last fall. And Andrew Jansky of the Design Commission is here to provide some testimony and answer any questions you may have as well.
I don't want to interrupt your flow too badly, but since the Design Commission took this up last fall and today, what has changed in the document?
Nothing has changed since we've spoke with the Design Commission.
Okay. And were Audubon and UGI involved?
UGI?
Is UGI
Urban Green Spaces Institute.
Urban Green Spaces Institute. They were, okay, well, we put out a notice of all the hearings as well as our open house events to all the stakeholders involved in this. They were pretty well attended. I do not believe anyone from those two organizations attended those hearings. And we had actually interest after those hearings, after the first open house, of subsequent open houses by the South Waterfront community. We did a follow-up open house with them, so we were more than willing to meet with any board or organization that wanted to meet with us. We did not contact all 150 people who originally were a part of the effort directly by phone or sit down with them.
Did you email them?
We did not email that I'm positive of the open houses. We did the typical noticing. But like I say, they were well attended by most of the stakeholders who were a part of the effort.
And have you read the December 2nd letter from the Urban Green Spaces Institute?
Yes, I have.
And your thoughts?
Specifically...
at the issues that they raised. De-emphasizing habitat restoration as a priority on the greenway was one of their concerns.
I would disagree with that. If you look at the guidelines themselves, it's broken into various components. So the first one deals with actually nothing to do with the greenway. It deals with the overall development inside South Waterfront. The second section of the greenway, or the design guidelines, deals specifically with greenway approaches, regardless of whether you're following the greenway development plan or other greenway options in the code. Then the last section of the code is a new one. We added that to deal with only the greenway development plan option. And it is there that you find a lot of the habitat interests. That's where that focuses if you follow that option. Those guidelines are not applicable to you if you are an applicant proposing the other options in the code for greenway review. So if you're meeting the base zone standards or coming in with your own greenway proposal, those would not be applicable to you, nor were they currently. And one thing I would note is that everything that we've put into the design guidelines to deal with the greenway development plan or amendments we've made to the code to address the greenway are all existing provisions. We've cleaned them up to make them more efficient, and we've added nothing new here.
Okay, their specific concerns seem somewhat modest in the sense that they, on this score, asked to incorporate images that more accurately reflect the restoration objectives of the greenway and modify the narrative on the North Greenway Reach to reflect restoration objectives.
Okay, well, specifically to the North Greenway Reach, all the imagery that's used from there came exactly from the 2004 adopted Greenway Development Plan provided by Parks, adopted by City Council. So to say that those images are not reflective of the approach is, we would disagree with that, as does Parks and our other partners in this project that we've talked to. To ignore that would be to ignore that plan. Now, to say that those images are exactly what's going to happen, that's false, too. One of the reasons that we put in this Type 3 design review process, because we have learned lessons. It's the lessons that are indicated in this letter, that there's been a process with NOAA Fisheries about how things have changed. One of the things we did note is that when the Greenway Development Plan was adopted in 2004, there was a lot that weren't known yet. You never really know what the federal government's going to approve until you make a proposal. We also didn't really know what the subsurface conditions along the bank were going to be at that time. So we wanted to have some flexibility when we put in a review. Rather than have development standards that were very black and white and rigid, we wanted to have a more discretionary process that allowed us to have some flexibility so that we could kind of anticipate those unanticipated events, such as some of the direction we've been getting from NOAA on the Central Reach. The Type 3 process allows us to do that. Now, regarding the imagery, one of the photos that's actually been discussed as being inappropriate is up on the screen right now. It's this one here on the lower right-hand side. This is actually from the riverbank restorations that have been done by the city in River Place. And one of the things we're focusing on here is the trail. Now, one of the things that we've heard is not appropriate here is that some of the bank treatment you see further off on the edge of the photo is not something that might be approved by NOAA today or isn't appropriate anymore. We're not really sure that that's true, but that's not even the focus of this image. The focus of the image is actually how to get that trail. And if you look at the combination of the image and the text, that is how design commission and design review staff actually applies these guidelines. They don't look at every little image that's in there. There's a lot of things you could probably pull out of that image that might not be something that we're really talking about. That's not the focus. The focus itself is the guideline and that trail connection and how it actually provides that cohesive connection down towards the river. Now, you could say that about every one of these images. A lot of the images that are actually being discussed are carryovers from the original design guideline package that was adopted in 2002. Okay, some are new.
Then the second item is the design guidelines call for open lawns, small play area, large activity area, community garden plaza, river overlook dock restroom. Given all these uses, et cetera, it is difficult to understand how the restoration goals can be met in the North Reach.
Okay, well, what that does is the guideline itself refers to the background document, which is the Greenway Development Plan. That is currently, when we were saying an applicant is going to follow the Greenway Development Plan, in that reach, they're asked to consider those things as well as the habitat component that is part of that plan. It's an essential part of that plan, and it's one that many stakeholders feel quite strongly about. I mean, I appreciate the concerns that habitat isn't the only focus of those, but it wasn't the only focus of the plan. There was also supposed to be a public recreation component, a trail component, a bike commuter component, and a number of other things. So if you were to come in and show nothing but plaza and turf area, you would fail to meet that design guideline. You would equally fail to meet it if you came in and showed nothing but habitat.
Okay. May I ask a clarifying question?
Sure.
This what's before us has to do with design guidelines applicable to South Waterfront and then design guidelines applicable to the Greenway, correct?
Yes.
So there's essentially two components. I got a letter that I think you're referring to, although I think I got an earlier version. It's just more like an email that summarizes concerns. And there's about 17 specific issues, mostly relating to habitat, and there's like 15 pictures and some comments on pictures. Parks has been at the table, Mayor, on this for a long time, and Parks has been working to get to this point. But I will simply say that on these comments, I went through them last night and tried to cross-reference them with the actual plan documents, but I'm just not that smart. And I want to just get a sense of you from you as to how you'd like to use the time today, because
I want to air out three issues.
You want to put?
I'm just airing out three issues with staff because I know they'll come up in testimony.
Okay,
is that all right?
No, but I are we going to at some point have a conversation as a group as to whether, limited to the Greenway, we would ask staff to give us a written response to some of these comments and postpone it, addressing that versus addressing it today? I mean, is that a live
option? I wanted to air out, just because we're all busy in our own specialty areas, I wanted to air out what I think are three sort of key issues, key concerns that I've heard, which is not the exhaustive list.
Okay.
Give you an opportunity, and I appreciate your forbearance in hearing staff's response. This is not an emergency, so it'd be just an initial airing out. Give you a chance to digest that and then get back to us with any additional issues or your take on the three issues that we're airing out.
And I'll simply say that in the past, when we've had an issue like this, something comes up and the timing is not great, but an issue comes up.
Mm-hmm.
When we've had staff come back with responses to questions prior to the vote, I have found it very helpful. It allows me to know whether there's still an open issue in my mind.
Sounds good.
And I'll try to follow this colloquy, but I also, to the extent it prompts staff to say that something does or does not have merit, it's not as helpful for me in terms of understanding the underlying issue.
I appreciate that we all have sort of different processing styles. I also, on these three key issues, I want to just get it out into the public dialogue as well. So we will definitely have staff respond via email. We're not voting today. This is a first reading. And then there might be other reactions as well. So I'll try to move as expeditiously as possible, and I appreciate your patience.
Sure.
So the issue of pilings?
Pilings. Okay, so there is existing code language that's citywide, and it deals with I believe specifically they're talking about a code provision that deals with exemptions towards dolphins in the river, or those types of pilings. There's an existing provision. River Plan's addressing that right now in the North Reach. My understanding is that exemption continues to exist in the North Reach despite the code updates. We didn't challenge that or any of the other really development standards that are in the code because that wasn't our directive in this case. Our directive was to find a way to make the Greenway Development Plan operational, not to go back and reinvestigate all the other development standards applicable to the Greenway in this process. That's something that could be handled by the River Plan as they do start doing the Central Reach this year. But it's not hasn't been a focus of our project, and it really didn't come up until recently.
And last issue for me, the request to be clear from us on coordinating moving forward.
I think there's an interesting suggestion there about working with the Bureau of Healthy Rivers in this case. It's a new entity in terms of this. We would have been working with them originally had they been in existence once we were working with all the other bureaus. And this is a unique project in many ways in that probably every commissioner here, definitely every commissioner here, owns a different implementation aspect of this because the Bureau of Development Services to PDOT, to Parks, to BES, to Healthy Rivers. And so I think that's a fine suggestion. There was a note there that there was some comments from BES that weren't incorporated into this process. We did receive those. We had dialogue with their Willamette program on this, and we believe we satisfactorily answered their questions. That dialogue occurred back in August, and we've had no further correspondence about this since then, although we've met with them several times on implementation issues in South Waterfront Greenway.
If I might comment on that, I'm certainly very interested with the Office of Healthy Working Rivers to provide that coordination function. That's what it's for. So we're excited about that. I'm concerned about having the code language correct so that we can then help with coordinating. I'm listening to you in your response to the mayor regarding the 2004 plan and previous plans. I'm concerned that one of the challenges we have here is that those plans are not working out as what we hoped, and that there were concerns when I was on the Planning Commission in 2001 as it was going through that the greenway was not wide enough, that the setbacks were not correct, and we're reading from the Design Commission that they're not. They're feeling that the greenway feels like private space, and this is their recommendation on how to fix that. I'm not yet convinced that we've got to that point, so I'd be interested to hear public testimony on that.
Well, I can comment on one aspect of that is that we really don't know yet in a lot of ways, too, in that we have a lot of this good language out there and a lot of good intent, but an actual greenway improvement project has yet to occur in South Waterfront. And so one of the things is we hope that this first phase of Central District is going to help us test a lot of these ideas, the setback, the guidelines, the other implementation aspects of this. But the reality is that no greenway improvements have yet occurred, and despite the fact that we've had 7 years' worth of development in the district.
Don't we also have to, by and by, find a way to pay for it, too?
That's one of the other aspects, and that's a difficult aspect.
That was, of course,
that may be just an inconvenient detail, but I'm not sure we have the money to do this either.
Well, it was the fundamental flaw. One of the fundamental flaws, I think, in that plan is that there was $0 allocated in the South Waterfront plan, the Little McAdam plan, for greenway improvements. So I think that's a challenge, but we have got development in the rest of the district, which we had a discussion a couple of weeks ago about native-like plants, and that with that district was supposed to be very special and the whole district relate to the river, and I'm not sure that we're there yet.
Any other council discussion?
Would Amanda like to respond to the charge that the Office of Healthy Rivers failed to weigh in last year?
I got elected as quickly as I could, Mr. Fish.
Help was on the way.
You're still in your presentation, right?
I believe so.
Okay.
We were pausing there for discussion.
Mayor, that was very helpful. Thank you.
Yep. Can you wrap it up?
I have a couple more items here. I will try to get to that. So there were other code amendments that were also a part of this thing that were asked by the Planning Commission, Design Commission along the way that were unrelated to the greenway. One of them, real quickly, is there's a required residential area in South Waterfront. Here, much like the Pearl District when the plans originally came there, there was a fear that residential development wouldn't take hold, so there was a target requirement in areas where we hope to see residential development. In that it has been successful and is continuing to be implemented, we don't feel this requirement is necessary anymore. It also is a potential impediment to people like Vestas should they choose to try to relocate into the district at some point in the future.
We should just pause there to celebrate that fact. The mayor has been pointing out at the Portland Plan hearings that because there's a lot more residential development in high-rises downtown, that has spared the neighborhoods in outer areas of Portland, and that's a very good thing, so congratulations on that.
Thank you. Next is a exemption on hotels. Right now, we have we always intended to have hotels as part of the South Waterfront District at some point, or a hotel. However, we put an exemption in there trying to block big box retail because of transportation concerns back when the project was adopted in 2002. Unfortunately, we failed to recognize that hotels are defined as a retail sales and service use, so we inadvertently prohibited the ability to put a hotel in the district. So we want to keep that same big box prohibition, but we want to allow for hotels to be part of the mix, and this one tweak does that. It just puts an exemption towards hotels.
Do we have a definition of hotels?
Yes.
It's a citywide definition.
Yeah. Yes. And then finally, we have the street plan amendments that were adopted in 2 weeks ago by council. You're familiar with this, that we've changed the North District street plan to accommodate light rail, Schnitzer campus, and future development of the Zidell campus. One of the things, though, is that there's about 15 different zoning maps in the Central City Plan District that reflect the prior street plans. We need to amend all of those to catch up with council's action on the street plan. And then lastly, there was a request by the Design Commission, I'll go through this pretty quickly, to add a new component. This is the only new thing being proposed in everything that we're showing you today. There was a concern that we're really not seeing the right activation with retail in the district, and that is having the problem with the public realm and public spaces, both along the greenway, along the streets, across from parks, key intersections. If you look at this map real fastly, it shows you that there's these red areas are where there's retail currently concentrated. Design Commission put out a proposal that these areas that are dark shaded should be where we really want to focus retail to activate those key intersections and public spaces. So what we proposed to do was to create a new guideline that talks about activation along the river. Now, in this case, it's not in the greenway. This is the interface set back from the greenway where you would have active uses such as maybe a cafe or a restaurant at certain locations. And then we would have a new code section that basically says when you find locations that are darkened on this map, 5, 10, 21, that 50% of that area would be dedicated to a retail sales and service use. You will note that two of the prior locations along the Greenway recommended by a design commission were removed. That happened at Planning Commission through additional public testimony. Design Commission is aware of this,